Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 67 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. The Nats GM Show is proudly sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. What is No Halftime and the No Halftime app, you ask? Well, let me tell you. You're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you could pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus Manny Machado, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break.
Hey guys, this is Jay Lethal, the undisputed champion of the world, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
I am proud to welcome from the Nats blog and Nats Talk on the go, Washington Nationals super fan and good friend of mine and now good friend of the show. Welcome Craig McHenry to the show. Craig, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Oh, thank you, Ryan. First time, long time.
Exactly. I'm very, very happy to have you. We've been talking about getting you on the show for a little while now, and it's been, okay, what's the topic going to be? What are the Nationals? What do we want to talk about? And I guess we have nothing really to talk about in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, not much has happened. It's been a little bit of a slow news week, which is fine. And it's nice that we kind of planned the show around some things happening.
Yeah.
You know, and we can just talk baseball for a little while, which literally I'd probably doing anyway, mostly to my dog. But in this situation, I get to talk to you about some of the fun stuff going on right now. So I'm really, really happy to be on the show. And yeah, not much has happened. It's kind of weird. It's been a little bit of a slow news day. As we talk right now, we're what, 15 minutes past the Nats, you know, just a normal 3-2 win over the Tigers.
Yeah. Let's start at the top where we have to start. Most importantly, what are you drinking?
Right now, I am drinking a Narragansett lager.
Ooh, okay. You're going to have to give a shout-out to them.
Give a shout-out to who?
Give a shout-out to them. I don't know them.
Oh, yeah, Narragansett Lager. They are out of Rhode Island. It's a small brewery. Basically, their whole philosophy is the PBR of New England. And ask any New Englander about Narragansett. Have you seen Jaws?
Are you saying Narragansett? N-A-R-R-A. Okay, I know them. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
That is correct. Narragansett. There we go. You need to get up to the Cape a little bit, and you'll drink some Narragansett.
That's why I knew it. Yeah, it's been a few years since I've been up in the Cape, but yeah, they do great stuff. Them and Cisco. Yes. Brewers are good up there
yes.
as well.
Oh, for sure. No, I'm drinking a nice Gansett right now, so it's going down nice after that. That's not what I was drinking during the game, but we had to switch it up a little bit for the show. Gotta keep it fresh.
Very understandable.
What about yourself? What are you drinking?
I am.
Let me guess. Baileys and coffee.
No, not at 11 o'clock at night. No, I'm not drinking coffee. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I did tell you off air that I am. I need to make a trip to the liquor store and the beer store, so I'm a little light in the ammo. But I am drinking right now an Abita Triple Haze.
Triple Haze.
Yes.
Very nice.
The Tripel style on the purple haze that they normally do.
Yeah, very nice. That's
in the bomber.
So like their new packaging.
I do. I like it. I like Abita a lot. But
yeah, one of the few from Louisiana, so that's nice.
Yeah, it's very. It's actually, I highly recommend it in the bomber. So, all right, my friend. I don't know where we should. Let's start with the beginning of the week. I think we all started with feeling a little down. I was in Chicago actually this weekend watching the Nationals get swept in that rather painful 4-game series, and midway through Monday night's game, all of a sudden the news breaks that probably the most shocking thing to me in the last 5 years for the franchise, Steven Strasburg signs a 7-year extension for $175 million, opt-outs after year 3 and 4, a bunch of deferred money, probably worth, I don't know, $150 million in real dollars, which is still scary for me to say. I just want to start with, were you completely floored like I was?
I was confused. It reminded me a lot of the Nationals winning. I think it was 12 out of 13 when Jim Riggleman was the manager. And all of a sudden, Bill Ladson tweets, Jim Riggleman has resigned. And everyone thought it meant re-signed.
Right.
So Chelsea Janes, you know, out of nowhere, Strasburg's just given up a 2-run bomb. And all of a sudden, you see a tweet from Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post saying, Steven Strasburg has signed a significant extension to stay in D.C. And everyone was just kind of like, wait, what? What just happened? So and I think it was...
And she's fantastic, but she's not normally a newsbreaker either, which kind of also made it a little strange.
Yeah, you generally look to the, you know, the Haymans of the world, the Rosenthals, to make that kind of news. Or maybe the I believe it's friend of the show, Chris Cotillo?
Yes, Cotillo, Cotillo. I always call him Cotillo, and it's Cotillo.
Tomato, yeah. Tomato, Cotillo, Cotillo. It's fine. So... it was really strange to just see that happen just out of the nowhere, just in the middle of the game. And the things that are strange about that, that one tweet pale in comparison to the quirkiness of this actual deal happening.
I don't even know where to start with it either. I can't think of anything that's been as shocking to me as since the Jason Worth signing. I mean, people ask me all the time, oh, is Strasburg going to stay in D.C.? I'm sure you got the same question. Well, I don't know. He's going to free agency. They're never going to sign a guy who's had Tommy John.
Yeah, he's going to free agency. Maybe he's going to end up on the West Coast because he's from San Diego.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty much the stock answer for the last
You know, Dodgers have a lot
years.
Of money. You know.
And, oh, he's a Scott Boras client, so it's going to be the most money at the highest bidder, and that's pretty much what it's going to be. And that's the answer. That's what it was for every single Scott Boras client since Jared Weaver signed his 5-year, $85 million extension back in 11 with the Angels. It's been that for every single Boras client.
I mean, I'm still kind of speechless at how crazy it is. I never thought Boras would sign something in the middle of the year, particularly something that wasn't outlandish, you know, a $300 million for 7 years or something that was just so absurd you had to, you know, put pen to paper. I mean, truthfully, this deal feels certainly market rate, if not a little below.
I would definitely say below. I know that during the introductory press conference, Mike Rizzo said that while the team was in Kansas City, Strasburg snuck away and did his physical for it. That's how long the deal's been pretty much agreed to and signed. And that there were no red flags, but there was a great discussion on Wednesday's Effectively Wild podcast by Baseball Perspectives with, you know, former guest of your show, I believe last episode maybe, Ben Lindbergh?
Yes, last episode.
And Sam Miller, about does Strasburg know something? Is something a little bit off with him that he would sign what I think we're both saying is a below market deal? I mean, 175, which really in today's money is, or that time's money is probably 160, when everyone thought he was going to be 200 plus.
Yeah, I would have started the number at 200.
Yeah, and to blow away the record set by Jordan Zimmerman for post Tommy John contract, not that much of a surprise. But the fact that it was done now, when Strasburg has honestly been off to a really good start, There's just so many layers of interest in this signing.
And if you look at it, he didn't, per annual value, he didn't destroy Jordan Zimmerman's deal. I mean, Jordan got, what, 5 years, $110 million, which is 22 a year. And, you know, I don't know the time value of money. And, you know,
let's just go ahead and say technically it's $175 million, so it's 25 a year.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's still, for somebody whose numbers are better and is younger, it just superficially, that seems to line up pretty fairly. I'm stunned.
Yeah, it's a strange deal. And one of the things that I think no one's talking about that should be more people talking about, the Strasburg shutdown. Everyone's favorite topic to bring up about Steven Strasburg. I mean, how many hot takes were there when he was shut down and angry about it, which anyone would be, that he would never stay in D.C.? And here he is. He and Scott Boras said, okay, we'll stay in D.C. It's mind-boggling.
And it seemed to me, if you listen to the press conference yesterday, I watched it today, his body language really kind of said, hey, that was a major reason that I'm still here, is they took care of me then. And they were looking out for me rather than maybe the team. Now, frankly, I thought he was the fifth best starter in a four-man playoff rotation at that point anyways, but nevertheless.
Right, and it should be said that one of the games that they did win that series by a very good starting pitching performance by Ross Detweiler, his replacement.
Yeah, six innings, one run allowed. Yeah, one of the best pitching performances in this franchise history. Yeah, so I'm just...
But that's a story that everyone loves to bring up when times are bad for the Nationals or when times are bad for Steven Strasburg. And yet here we are, Strasburg saying that's a major reason when he first realized that this organization cares not just about winning, but cares about the people they have too. So you can tell how important it was. And you said you watched the press conference. I've never seen him smile.
Yeah, he actually looked happy.
He looked so happy.
Now, I would be if I had that kind of dough in my pocket, too. I mean, I'd be that grinning be like nice. The Joker, but, you know.
But you're looking at a player whose first college coach was, or his only college coach was Tony Gwynn, who is a San Diego legend and was there his entire career. So he saw firsthand what that meant to the town of San Diego. And Strasburg, he's a quiet guy. He's not your typical superstar. He's a family man. He and his wife love D.C. They really feel comfortable here, and that says a lot.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a lot of good points.
It's still shocking, yeah.
And the place I want to take this next is, and it kind of leads into the next topic, is do you think that this has any bearing one way or the other on re-signing Harper long-term?
I think that it does have some little bearing.
Because I go back and forth.
I go back and forth, but I think the main reason that I think it has some effect on a potential Harper extension is that for the last 5 years, we haven't seen Scott Boras sign a pre-free agency extension for any of his clients at all. And now we see that's possible. So you're seeing players all the time, and the great sound bites. Oh, I love the town. I love the fans. I love the city. It's great. I love it. Free agency comes. They, Jordan Zimmerman and Desmond, book it. So the fact that Steven Strasburg felt so comfortable, said he was comfortable, when Mike Rizzo approached Scott Boras and said, let's see if we can make a deal. Okay, let me talk to Steven. Steven says, yeah, okay, let's do it. That's a possibility that I didn't think would happen. I thought Scott Boras would have much more influence of saying, no, I want you to be a $200 million pitcher. You're better than this. You're better than 175. I think you deserve to be. But he actually put the interest of his client. And Bryce Harper, his idol is Cal Ripken. He loves Cal. He loves the fact that he's stayed his entire career in Baltimore. He loves Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter stayed his whole career in New York. So... Yeah. You're seeing – I see somewhat of a potential that it's much more willing. I think there's much more of a chance than there was 2 days ago, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's true. And just kind of thinking off the top of my head now, a lot of the big contracts that have been signed in the last few years have been – extensions on players staying with the same organization. I think Mike Trout, I think Giancarlo Stanton, I think Justin Verlander, Felix Hernandez, now this with Steven Strasburg as well. And right. I guess some of that's maybe the reason that this free agent crop is going to be so poor, you know, in 6 months or whatever it's going to be at the end of the season, which kind of then circles back to the original point of, well, why wouldn't Steven stay in free agency and give himself the chance? But when you're happy where you are, I guess that kind of answers the question.
Yeah, and it's easy for you and I to say. We're sitting here, you know, thinking of numbers like $175 million, $110 million, and it's monopoly money to us. That's not tangible. We can't understand.
Yeah, I couldn't say yes fast enough. Yeah, I mean,
like, if you told me the difference between $51 million and $61 million, I would be like, I don't understand the question.
Yeah, because there's no difference to us in buying power. We can buy anything that we want. Yeah, exactly right.
No, it just doesn't. I think it just doesn't mean that much when you're talking numbers that extreme. I mean, regardless, Jordan Zimmerman at 110, his grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren won't have to worry about money. And I mean, what's really the difference between $110 million and $175 million? And Steven Strasburg's not the kind of guy. He's not a celebrity. He's not showing up to awards things. He's not on Twitter. He's not doing any of this. He is a quiet guy. And he's happy. He just wants to pitch, play baseball, and do that. So what's the difference between 175 and 210? To him, doesn't look like it's very much.
Yeah, the answer is nothing, really, at the end of the day, because he didn't want to go out and see it, or seek it, I guess is the better verb.
Yeah, what is it? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush? I mean, Steven Strasburg blew out his arm again, had to do a second Tommy John?
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, he probably has comfortable life money at this point, but you're right. He doesn't have, you know, wealth-changing money and kids and future grandkid-type changing money. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah, and it's what is – I'm sure by now you've read Jeff Passan's The Arm.
I'm in middle of it, yeah.
Middle of it, yeah. You had to binge read The Only Rule Is It Has to Work.
Correct. Yep.
twice.
You got it. You
twice.
Got it.
But no, the biggest precursor for future injury is an injury already. So the biggest, I guess, red flag for having an arm injury is already having an injured arm at some point in your life. Therefore, Steven Strasburg is more at risk than a lot of pitchers out there that haven't had a Tommy John or haven't had a shoulder issue. So you might say something along the lines of he's working on borrowed time. I don't like to think that way because I think he's been handled very well by the organization, and I think he's been very smart about his own regimen. So I'm not as worried about that, but it's still there, and it lingers, and it's one of the reasons why it makes me really anxious to watch players like Noah Syndergaard with a, you know, 98-mile-an-hour slider. That's a video game slider because you just cringe for the arm. So, I think Strasburg decided he was happy where he was. The Nationals have a great team looking forward. You're now seeing a rotation going into the next, at the very least, 3 years that's going to have Max Scherzer, who, oh, by the way, struck out 20 batters tonight.
Yeah, maybe he got his arm slot back. Yeah.
Yeah. Steven Strasburg and super prospect, I believe you referred to him earlier today as uber prospect, Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, that's a nice way to start your top three with Joe Ross and a whole host of other guys that could handle the fourth and fifth spots, yeah.
So I think he saw the writing on the wall a little bit for himself and saw this is a place where I believe I can win. This is a place where I can be a fan favorite, I can be beloved, that I'm comfortable. And I think the comfort factor is the biggest thing for Steven Strasburg. Going back to the original question, yeah, I mean, Harper says all the time how much he loves DC. I mean, I don't follow him on Instagram or Twitter or anything because I don't really care that much about athletes saying rise and grind all the time.
Yeah, and I don't need to see them drinking protein shakes and lifting. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sitting on my couch drinking beer, talking to my dog. Come on. But he always is talking about how much he loves DC, how much he loves the city, and all of that. So I guess when it comes down to it, does he really? And if he does, yeah, he might stay. And I think there's more of a possibility that he will now that we know that Scott Boras is willing.
I could actually see somebody liking DC as an athlete as well, because it's still a big-time major metropolitan city, one of the biggest cities in the world, but you can still blend in a lot more than you can in some other cities. I mean, you don't get caught up in the glitz and the glamour that you would in Miami or L.A. or New York or some of the other, you know, more media-driven cities. I mean, this is more a politics town. I would think the athletes are revered and get treated great, but can also hide a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just have to look no further than Matt Harvey last 2 months of last year, when he was ready to shut it down for the year with concerns about his arm. And every single day was New York Daily News, New York Post articles about him on the front page or back page, whichever it is, whichever trashy part of their newspaper they want to put it on.
Page six?
Nice. Nice. So just look no further than that. I mean, I don't think there's a real vitriol among the fan base in DC outside of Jonathan Papelbon choked a guy and I don't like him, or Daniel Murphy is a bigot. I really don't think there's a lot of hate going around. I mean, there's a lot more respect, I think, in DC, which is really saying something considering, you know, Congress is here.
Well, we get all our venom out for them. I think that's honestly some of it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, if you're looking at a player like Max Scherzer, and how political he is and how active his wife is with the nonprofit scene in DC, obviously it's a huge thing. And Bryce Harper, he has this whole platform, Make Baseball Fun Again, which I can't tell you how much I've loved seeing Joey Votto and Yasiel Puig and all these players among all these great young stars in baseball really take that mantra and, you know, really focus on that. So, I mean, in a sense, Bryce is politicking from DC, and his platform is Make Baseball Fun Again. It's a unique atmosphere in DC, and I think that's something that can absolutely be appealing to a lot of folks around baseball.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we could cover this for a lot longer, but I just I want to wrap it up here a little bit. I graded the signing a solid B today on my site after kind of thinking it through. What would you give the signing yourself?
Right now, I'd give it a B+. I hesitate. A is going to be something insane. I mean, any extension for Bryce Harper, honestly, would get an A. But I think there are concerns going forward with health, but any issue he's had so far that's landed him on the DL since Tommy John has all been fluky. I mean, any performance issue we had last year was a mechanical issue from an injury that he ended up overcompensating for. So nothing that really, nothing like a shoulder, nothing like a forearm tightness, anything like that. So I think definitely a B+, getting it below market value is great. And I think at the very least you're seeing Steven Strasburg through his age 30 season, which is pretty much through his quote-unquote peak, if you will, as a pitcher.
Yeah.
If you look at where they start to really drop off in performance. So, and at worst, 34. And he's already shown how smart he is as a pitcher. And he's got Mike Maddox now that really is just one of the greatest pitching coaches in the game. So he can learn a little bit more there and become that, I guess, wily veteran at age 32, 33, if he doesn't have three monster years and opts out and gets another $200 million.
Yeah, I could see him pitching off his changeup like Felix at 31, 32, 33, being that type of a pitcher and reinventing himself.
Yeah, can you believe how young Felix still is?
No.
Like, that's insane.
It's amazing.
Like, you think about Felix Hernandez, and you look at him, how old is he? He's, what, 32, 31, 32?
God. Yeah, I think he's just into his 30s, yeah.
Yeah, he's barely into his 30s, And it feels like we've been talking about him for 15 years.
And we have. He's been pitching in the majors since he was 19.
He's been in the majors forever. It's crazy. So it's great. I think it's a solid B plus, pushing A. I'm hesitant to be that bullish on it, but I think it, at the very least, you've got him for the next 3 years through his prime, when right now he is one of the best pitchers, one of the top, easy top 10 in baseball.
Yeah. All right, let's move ahead. Let's talk about Bryce Harper on Monday night. Espinoza strikes out, big shock at the plate. Questionable call is probably the only thing that was shocking about it. And umpire decides to ring up, not Danny, who was complaining under his breath walking back to the dugout, or any of the other people that are in the top step of the dugout. No, he singles out Bryce and throws him out from the base of the dugout. Start with your take.
I know this is a family show, but that's bullshit.
Yeah.
I was not happy about it. I think it's pretty much a textbook hashtag ump show right there. It's Harper was chirping all game, but I think by this point it's been well established by PitchFX data, by other players. Bryce Harper has one of the best eyes in baseball.
It's
really good. And this is something that, who saw this from Bryce Harper 5 years ago? Who saw him projected as having this good of an eye? I mean, that's probably not something that's easily projectable, but still, he's matured into such a phenomenal baseball player all around, not just power and speed and aggression, but he's got a good eye. And yes, some of those pitches were borderline, but they were borderline. They weren't gimme strikes. They could go either way earlier in the game for him. So he was already a little bit revved up, and then the Espinoza strikeout happened. The probably 30-plus thousand people at Nats Park were going crazy. The dugout was going crazy. And then all of a sudden, Brian Knight ejects someone. It's not clear who, but the fact that it was Harper, I think, is insane.
I said this, I think, on Twitter, but I really want to make the point that umpires at this point, to get to the major leagues, have heard literally everything. They've been called everything. Their mother has been called everything. Their dog has been called everything. Unless that individual is up in your face, they got to let it go.
Yeah, and how many arguments have we seen where it gets very, very heated and, you know, someone gets ejected, but it seems warranted. I mean, this just seemed, okay, I heard general rabble-rousing coming from the dugout, and I'm just going to throw Harper out because I want to teach him a lesson. That's what it felt like. That, it felt like Cole Hamels trying to teach him a lesson. Whereas, and you know, I was mad at the time, but my anger subsided the next batter.
Right, exactly. And that was the ultimate in – it avoided an ump show, because all we would have talked about in the game is, you know, what – and we still are talking about Bryce, and we'll get to the post post-celebration, but
– Yes, the post-celebration and the news that broke today.
But if – I want to get one more hot take in before we move on from it is –
Beautiful.
It reminded me of the scene in Caddyshack when the caddy master started complaining about, you know, if you guys keep screwing off and you keep doing this and bad caddying, we're going to get golf carts in here and replace you. And it felt like one of those moments to me where all of a sudden they were saying, you know, you all keep acting like this. You keep acting like petty human beings. We're going to get umpire robots in here and we're going to take your jobs from you.
And God, that would be great.
And it really, it kind of smacked me in the face with, you know, all of a sudden I just, you know, something comes up in my head, but it really reminded me of that with PitchFX now and the technology we have with instant replay and what we can do. You keep seeing stuff like this, and umpire robots are going to come in real fast.
Well, look no further than, you know, tennis or English Premier League soccer or even international soccer. They have the Hawkeye system. They have the goal decision system. where they literally show you a graphical representation of the exact, in this instance, it would be the plate, or with tennis, it would be the line, with soccer, it would be the goal, and they show you exactly where the ball sits on that line. It's the technology is there, and all it really takes is some fixed cameras. It's not that difficult. It really isn't. Obviously, you'd have to adjust some way for height of batter, that kind of thing. But that's obviously not a mathematician here, but I would assume a simple algorithm based on lasers or science or something like that. But anyway, I think if you want a hot take, I can happily give you a hot take on this whole situation.
Bring it.
It seems to me that the biggest obstacle in Bryce Harper's Make Baseball Fun Again is Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think even to that point, maybe the umpires and some of the, you know, the establishment, if you want to use that air quote.
I think it's a top-down thing. I know we haven't seen much of Rob Manfred to really know what kind of commissioner he is. I know he had some comments on Bryce Harper's Make Baseball Fun Again and that he's in favor of it. But we're seeing things like last year when Major League Baseball cracked down on animated GIFs on Twitter or blogs using team names or podcasts using team names and stuff like that. And I'm sure you caught wind of that and maybe clenched a little bit tighter for a week, hoping you didn't get a cease and desist.
Thank goodness for no space between the S and the G. Thank goodness.
That's right. So anyway, you're seeing baseball do the exact opposite of what it needs to do. Characters like Bryce Harper, like Yasiel Puig, need to be celebrated. They need to be able to be shared online. Just look at how successful the NBA has been with younger fans because they've embraced that culture of things. And to some extent, same with the NHL, which NHL being more socially and fan progressive than Major League Baseball is just sad because that's, you know, fourth tier. As much as I love the NHL, that's a fourth tier sport right now. So I think my hot take on the whole situation is we need to see more of what Bryce Harper did and encourage it, encourage the passion, encourage the personality than we've been seeing. And that kind of leads right into the news that we saw today that Bryce Harper was fined and suspended one game for his post-game actions now, about the ejection. What do you think about that?
Hot take to it. I actually think they're right in suspending him a game.
Really?
Not for the F-bomb. And I'm going to try my best to keep this as family-friendly. I've got Matt's Bats as a listener. I'm going to try to keep this as family-friendly. But that happens all the time. I mean, if you've ever played a sport above the age of 12 years old, you've heard that word yelled at every player under the sun. I have no problem with that. I did have a problem with him coming out onto the field.
Yeah,
you're ejected. You're not supposed to be on the field.
That's where I have
the problem.
After you've been ejected, yeah, I get that.
Because that's a slippery slope of all of a sudden people start coming back on the field, and that's where I kind of agreed with it, and I think he should appeal it. He'll get it reduced, or he'll do it when he was going to take a day off anyways. But I thought there was at least some merit to it from that perspective.
Right. I thought the same. I expected at the time there would definitely be a fine. I wasn't sure about the suspension. I was probably 60-40 that there wasn't. But when I think it was John Morosi tweeted something along the lines of MLB said that the expletive was a part of the suspension?
And because it gets replayed 100 times, and nobody would have noticed if Bryce runs out there and doesn't say anything to the ump and is jumping up and down in the middle of 25 men. The fact that that gets caught on Masson's camera, and I'm not taking a shot at Masson.
And ESPN.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point,
too. It was a national broadcast.
I think that's what also did it. They kind of forced their hand because now every hour on the hour on ESPN News, ESPN2, ESPN SportsCenter, that's being
first
seen.
Take. PTI,
right?
Whatever hot take, hot garbage they're putting out these days. But
it is hot garbage too. Wow.
But yeah.
I thought that statement made it so much more likely that Bryce Harper is going to actually win on appeal.
And when I think he will.
Because, I mean, that's an overreach. That's a big-time overreach. Because if you're going to suspend Bryce Harper, even if it's just in part for dropping an F-bomb, yes, it was directed towards the umpire, but you've also got literally 5 days ago, John Farrell, Red Sox manager, not leaving after getting thrown out, and David Ortiz getting ejected, coming back out of the dugout, pretty much running as fast as David Ortiz can, which is not very fast, straight towards the umpire to get in his face. That's coming back on the field after you've been ejected.
No question.
No action there.
And that was hostility and a physical type of threatening, yeah. If nothing else. I mean, in that way, I think that's a lot worse than what Bryce did. But
and there was absolutely no action taken from Major League Baseball regarding that situation. And then back in, I think it was 2010, Ian Kinsler was suspended for a game for contact with an umpire. Or no, for the exact same thing, coming back out after a walk-off to celebrate. And his was overturned on appeal as well. So I think it was one of those things. Major League Baseball had to suspend him to, you know, keep their precedent, whatever BS they want to say. But I think that's part of the problem.
But
I think that's what Bryce Harper's talking about.
Right.
That's not making baseball fun again. You need these personalities. You want these personalities. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. Baseball needs people like Bryce Harper. And as much as I love and adore Mike Trout, he's boring.
Yeah, he's
the
wallpaper.
Coolest thing about him is he loves the weather.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So,
but I think that, and to further on to your point, suspending Bryce Harper does nothing positive for the game. That's one game where fans can't see him. The people that travel to watch the game don't get to see him. I mean, nothing positive necessarily comes from him sitting a game. Make it into a positive. If you want to find him and have him donate money to charity, yeah, the man makes lots of money. And I don't want to pick on him for his salary, but at least that could do some good. You know, like the other day when he gave that money to that homeless woman, who I actually saw that woman that same day. I know who the woman was. That's a positive thing that could be done. I mean, I'd rather them, rather than hurting the fans and hurting the game, I'd rather them do something positive if they need to punish him, quote-unquote, for this action.
Right. And so I think it'll end up being a fine. I think especially – I mean, there's a precedent that – running out on the field after a win is okay. There's a precedent that that's not a suspendable offense. I think a fine is fine. I don't think Bryce has a problem with that. I don't think anyone has a problem with it.
And if they want to put it under, hey, it was a negative for the game, having that being replayed over and over, I think he would even be fine with that, like you say. Yeah, you're right. I probably shouldn't have said that, and I wish the camera hadn't have caught it. But
right. And then you also have, I know, obviously, completely different scenario. Many different issue. David Ortiz in the first game after the Boston bombing, he dropped an F-bomb.
Yeah,
he dropped an F-bomb
on
and it
microphone.
In front of everyone and their mother. And even tonight in the game, you heard F-bombs on the broadcast. So, I mean, that's where I think MLB really kind of shot themselves in the foot with this suspension if they really wanted it, is by saying that that was a part of it. Because where does it end?
Right.
Where do you say that, oh, you've got bases loaded, two outs, and you popped out, and you slam your bat on the ground and scream an F-bomb that everyone can hear? Oh, can you be suspended for that too because it's about the F-bomb? That's where I think they really shot themselves in the foot and lost it there, which is why I think it's going to end up being just a fine, which I think is deserved. I think that's fine.
Yeah,
I don't have any problem with that.
Even if it was a stiff fine, I think it would be fine. And I don't like to, you know, take money out of other people's pockets, but yeah, I think he would be fine with that. I don't think he's worried about even a $25,000 fine, which would seem absurd.
I think
he would donate it to charity and say, great, thank you, that's wonderful, let's move on.
Yep.
And with that, let's move on to tonight's game. A little something, a little more positive.
We haven't even gotten to tonight's game yet. That's
it's been a
awesome.
Crazy 48 hours, and we're not even talking about the season, which has been crazy. So Scherzer, who I think
I know I walked into tonight's game thinking, I think he's about due for a bounce back, but I certainly was nervous about what was going to be on the Hill tonight against Detroit and their excellent lineup. And next thing you know, you look up, he's got 15 strikeouts through five innings. He's got, what, 18 through eight? And he ends up with 20 strikeouts in the game. Your thoughts? I mean, I don't even know where to start. I mean,
yeah, there's really nowhere to begin with this. And what's funny about it is he still, you know, his ERA went down tonight, obviously, but he still gave up two home runs.
Yeah, two solo bombs. And that has been his, I mean, really the bugaboo since he's maybe the first eight starts in Washington. But since he's been here, that's really been, I mean, he's given up about a home run or more a start.
Yeah, I think this season alone, he's at easily over 10, maybe 12 home runs.
And he gives
them
up to some, I mean, he gave up the one to in the ninth to a legit hitter. But, I mean, Jose Iglesias took him deep in the second or whatever it was. I mean, that's a punch and Judy hitter if there is a punch and Judy hitter. I mean, nice. He's giving them up to every, yeah, I know, I like that line. The point is he's giving them up to everybody, which is, I mean, if they're solo shots, it's one thing. But are you concerned about Scherzer's long ball issues?
I'm somewhat concerned, but I think that it's not been too much of an issue. I don't know. It's been early. I think it's just taken him a little bit of time to get his feel. He had a little bit of a downswing last season in the beginning of the second half, but he pulled it out through September and ended with the, you know, phenomenal second no-hitter of the season against the Mets. So he has shown in the past that he kind of goes a little bit cyclical. So I'm not as concerned because I think that he has the potential to pull off a 4 or 5 start stretch where he's the best pitcher in baseball, which he's done already twice in a Nationals uniform. And this could be the jump start into a third time.
And I think he got a lot of, I don't want to say good luck, because luck's kind of, you make your own luck, particularly on the mound, but he had a lot of good breaks last year. You know, his ERA was mid-2s. I mean, I don't think it's unexpected for it to jump more closer to 3 this season and still have basically the same type of success.
No, it's not at all. I mean, luck is absolutely a part of the game, and no one can really be expected to have a 2.5 ERA 2 years in a row. I mean, Clayton Kershaw is amazing, and one of the most amazing things about him is that his ERA has gone down every single season he's been a major league pitcher, and that is the antithesis of normal.
Right.
So it is absolutely probable that he's going to regress somewhat, but what he regresses to is the question, and I think it's just a little bit less. I mean, I still think he's an ace. I still think he's absolutely worth the money because he will do this from time to time. I mean, obviously he's never done 20 strikeouts before, but last year, out of nowhere, just throwing no hitters. I mean, he came between a flare in the eighth inning in Milwaukee.
I was going to say,
Jose Tabata leaning into a pitch away from a no-hitter followed by a perfect game last season.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got that brilliance in him, and he's becoming a smarter pitcher.
And help me, but the game that he didn't throw a no-no, I think he gave up one hit, was probably the best game he pitched last year.
Yeah, and it might have been. I'd have to look at the
I'm not even saying by game score or anything. Just by watching that game, it felt like he was most dominant in the game. He gave up the one hit than even the ones he threw no hitters. So,
yeah.
But we're talking
That game was insane.
But let me ask you, maybe the better question, I mean, we can gush over this outing, but were you concerned about Scherzer before tonight?
I was a little bit concerned just from, it seems like he's been missing a lot of spots.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's always had a lot of movement on his fastball, and he seemingly has had straight ball, not a lot of movement, throwing, you know, 95, not really touching the heights that he really did last year, sitting more 93, 94, and obviously tonight was the outlier where He touched, as we discussed, 98 once, hit 97 a bunch. But his velocity hasn't been there, and I think in turn the movement on his pitches has been a little bit different. So he's been, instead of last year when he was hitting the corner, the outside corner against a righty, he was hitting inside of the plate, middle of the plate, just meatball. So he's missing 6 inches, 4 inches, something like that. But it really makes a difference because major league hitters are major league hitters. And what was your wonderful phrase for, you know, middling hitter?
Punch and Judy?
Yep, Punch and Judy. Nice. The Punch and Judy guys can hit that out. The quad A players can hit out a mistake pitch.
Or certainly put it in the gap, if nothing else, yeah.
So I think he's had a little bit of bad luck. I think his start in Chicago, where he gave up, I want to say, 4 bombs. Wind was blowing out in Wrigley, which is literally a pitcher's worst nightmare.
I can't even. So, yeah.
So I was concerned, not overly concerned, because I think he's a smart enough pitcher. And like you mentioned, you just kind of dropped in there, finally figured out that arm slot.
So where are you at now? How much more confident do you feel after 20 strikeouts and 9 innings?
I'm not, oh, he's back, but I'm 80% of the way there, I guess. I won't be swayed by small sample size because I can't let myself be. I got to keep guarded a little bit.
Yeah, the only good thing about that I'll say about it is it makes me feel more confident that it's mechanical than it. It's an arm or a injury issue, because he was touching 98 tonight. The stuff was the best I've seen it, so I don't think he's hurt.
Right. I really liked how his slider was working tonight. It was pretty much a frisbee slider in that it went just completely horizontal and didn't have a lot of that vertical movement. I thought that was just nasty, because you rarely see that. You kind of see that, what is it, 2 to 8 o'clock movement from a right-hander on your slider, but his was moving like 3 to 9.
Yeah, it was more sweeping sideways.
Crazy.
More like an L-shape kind of going away from a batter. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. It wasn't the, wait for it, are you ready for this? The Aaron Seeley.
Oh.
Yeah.
12-6 type slider?
Dude.
Oh, I liked me some Aaron Seeley.
Yeah, how could you not?
Red Sox was traded to Seattle. Oh, very nice.
He's a Washingtonian.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yes, he was. I grew up out there in Seattle.
Oh, you meant that Wash? I thought you meant like local DC area.
Not
like
DC. No, he's a Pacific Northwesterner.
That's funny.
Yeah. So he get that Aaron Seeley, not the opposite of that. Like that instead of the 12-6, it was the 3-9.
That's the first Aaron Seeley mention on this podcast, I can guarantee as well. So
I am very happy about that. I'll take it.
Very nice. All right. So we're feeling good about Scherzer.
Feeling much better about Scherzer. I was at his first no hitter last season, and it was really probably the greatest sporting event experience I've ever had. Top three easy. Let's see, I was at Randy Johnson's 300th win.
Oh yeah, that was a great one. Yeah,
yeah, which he was pitching for the Giants at the time, and it was actually at Nats Park.
That was a great fluke that it worked out. Yeah, it was a late season game. Yeah. If I remember, like August or September.
Yeah, something like that. And it was supposed to be a Thursday night game, and it was going to be nationally televised, all that. It ended up being rained out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is 100% right.
4 hour, 3.5, 4 mm-hmm. hour rain delay. And they ended up doing a traditional doubleheader. Got to see that win. So very, very cool experience for that one. And then seeing my alma mater win a football national championship. Although one double A, still really cool. But the Max Scherzer one was amazing. So feeling good about that. Feeling good about the Max Scherzer right now. So, yeah.
All right, let's do a couple of, I don't want to call it rapid fire, but rapid takes. A couple of guys on the team. I'm really concerned about Anthony Rendon.
I'm less concerned about Anthony Rendon. He's
okay,
been...
give me some encouragement, because I'm seeing a guy that's not hitting fastballs on the inner half and is hitting a lot of weak ground balls.
You're also seeing a guy that's hit his seventh double this tonight. He's really starting to make contact where he hasn't been before. I'd say if you went on Baseball Reference, looked at the last seven games, you would see some encouraging signs.
Okay.
I think the eye's getting back there. I think the timing's there. And you're seeing him hit to opposite field, which, you know, when a hitter's able to hit with authority to opposite field, that they're really on.
Let me give a hot take that I hope is going to just blow up in my face on purpose. I'm throwing it out there. I'm worried that Rendon is now not a guy that's, when he's on the field, he's a stud. But we wonder if he's going to be on the field too. Some years are really good with him and some years are not. And I'm starting to get to that point.
Yeah, he had that amazing top five MVP rookie season. And then injuries. And he never really got it back last year. And that's why I'm starting to get worried.
He was healthy. So, anyways, I hope you're right. And I'm hoping that this is like the old people will mock me in 10 days on Twitter kind of thing. So
I will remember that. So I'm throwing it out there. In 10 days. It's the reverse jinx.
Yes, 1,000% is what I'm hoping
it
this
is. It is the Lavelle Spegner versus Johan Santana.
I love me some Lavelle Spegner. We almost had it with Roark the other day against Jake Arrieta, too. That
you
should
know
have
what?
Come through.
I called that. I predicted that.
It was all lined up, too. We should have won that game. But
yeah.
All right, next one. And I know Beard's not going to be happy, but Jason Wirth, man. That bat looks like he's swinging in a swimming pool.
I mean, was there a more predictable double play than that tonight? After that, I'm going to go ahead and say I think it was missed. I think that went over the base.
Yeah, I agree with you.
On that down the line, third base, I thought it was over the base. I thought it should have been a nice little double for Jason Wirth. He's making solid contact at least now, and he's not trying to catch up to 92. So that's positive.
But if you throw him anything on the outer third, he can't hit it.
He cannot hit it at all.
I don't care what it is. It can be slop. It can be a fastball. He cannot hit anything on the outer third.
Simple solution. Trade for Mike Trout.
All right. I like that one. All right. next guy I got to ask you about, Ryan Zimmerman.
Ryan Zimmerman's the same thing. Ryan Zimmerman's really been tough to watch.
All right. Help me, because it looks like he's carrying a pickaxe at the plate and he's just chopping down on wood.
It's bad. I'm not going to help you on this. I can't. There's no launch.
He's hitting the ball hard, but there's no launch angle. He's plowing it right into the ground.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about this because this is something that I've been struggling with as a, I guess, more saber inclined, more stat driven baseball fan. I have seen Ryan Zimmerman hit sub 240 this season, and I've seen Bryce Harper take 15 walks in four games, 16, 17 walks in four games. Lineup protection. It's a thing, right?
It has to. And I was going to write a wonderful point because we didn't even talk about this off air, but I've been trying to write a column about this and I almost tweeted about it the other day. Like, if you don't think it exists, watch that series on Saturday and Sunday.
Right. I struggle with it because I can't quantify it. It's not something, it's like clubhouse chemistry. You can't put a number on it. You can't collect data on something like that. So,
but teams obviously value it. I mean, you know, Johnny Gomes has had a job for, until he went to Japan today, he's had a job for how many years because he's a good guy? I mean, there's got to be something to it. You know, how many times do we hear, oh, I got to have somebody behind me in the lineup? And
Right. And you're just like, oh, well, there's no statistical proof that that's a thing. But, I mean, Bryce Harper on Sunday, he walked six times and got hit once.
Yeah, I was at the
game.
And
Ryan Zimmerman had an MLB record. 14 men left on base.
I loved, and you guys dropped it on your show today. The record was 12.
The record was 12.
He beat it by two. Baseball's been around a little while. He beat a record by two. He beat a record by 14%, guys. Like, that's insane that he could beat a record by that much. In this day and age.
Baseball's been around for a little bit of time.
And he shattered a record. I mean, that's shattering a record.
Yeah, when you're talking in under 15 data points and you beat it by more than one, that's insanity. It was atrocious. So I can't really tell you anything positive right now about Ryan Zimmerman because I don't feel anything positive. And I know what was it? Monday night, Tuesday night, last night, Tuesday night, Ryan Zimmerman hit 2 home runs. Yay. Fantastic. Awesome. That was great. And then later in the game, Bryce Harper intentionally walked to get Ryan Zimmerman. I believe I tweeted something along the lines of, I would do the exact same things that the Tigers are doing right now, because regardless of the 2 home runs, it's still not been a good year for Ryan Zimmerman, and the numbers were in the Tigers' favor. And once again, it worked.
At this point right now, you have to let anybody besides Bryce and Daniel Murphy beat you.
Right.
Because the whole lineup is struggling besides.
Yeah, we finally saw, for whatever BS reason that Dusty Baker ended up putting Daniel Murphy in the four hole tonight, we saw it work out.
Yeah, and he only gashed, what, 2 or 3 doubles?
Yep. I think he went 3 for 4 or something like that. 2 doubles.
Mm. So, all right, last guy I got to add. Well, actually, it's kind of a collective thing, but the bullpen? What happened? They were really good for a while, and now it feels like they're – now, some of it's they're overworked. I think that's probably the easy answer for us to throw out there. But, I mean, you know, Papelbon's Papelbon, and Rivero is, you know, mostly Jekyll but sometimes Hyde. But the rest of these guys are – I mean, what is Trinan right now? What is – Oliver Perez and Sean Kelly and
– Yeah, I think right now Dusty Baker is the only human person in the universe that – still thinks that Blake Treinen can get out a lefty.
Yeah.
It's just not happening. It's not happening. And I know Sunday against the Cubs, he hit a guy instead of, you know, giving up a double or a home run. So that was an improvement, I guess. But Treinen, I think I said something along the lines of, he is the 2016 Garrett Mock. He is all the potential in the world to be a phenomenal pitcher, and everyone will talk to you and gush at length about his stuff and his makeup and all of that, but he just hasn't been able to do it.
Can I just insert the name Henry Rodriguez instead?
That's fine,
because it's the same. It's the same idea.
Daniel Cabrera too.
It's the same idea. It's $1 million arm, and they just can't get it. And I'm not even going to say 10-cent head, because I don't know that that's it. It's just they can't get it done for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but every time I see him, he makes me nervous.
And he still isn't throwing a changeup, so we wonder why he's not getting lefties out.
Yeah.
So
Treinen makes me nervous. I think Ollie Perez has been a really good pickup.
And Petit's been pretty good as well.
Petit has been exactly as advertised. Yeah. He has done the job to the best of his ability, and he's done exactly what's asked of him. His role is to be the long man, the swing man, whatever you want to call it. But he's done that, and he's done that well so far. So,
and I do think
fine with him.
I think to a certain degree, having Scherzer's great outing tonight, having tomorrow off, or whenever, but anybody's listening to this, having Thursday off, giving the bullpen 2 days off might really help that pen.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really nice that they all get some time off. I know. Yeah. Pap threw a bit tonight, but Papelbon, I mean, what do you want to say? He's a 35-year-old closer who throws.
I'm very comfortable with him.
90 miles an hour with a 6% swing rate, swing and miss rate. I mean, what do you expect?
I'm okay with him when he's on some rest. I'm not good when he's on second or third day pitching. Kind of the same idea, because he's 35 years old and the margin for error, but he's been throwing pretty good when he's got some rest. I mean, it's 92-93 with some zip. But like you say, when he's on the back-to-back or goodness of 3 days, 3 times in 4 days or something, it's flat and it's 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, and it's nerve-wracking to see him come in, because you want your closer to be someone with stuff like Felipe Rivero.
Yeah, at least at the end of the day, challenge them, and if they hit the 98, then they hit the 98, yeah.
Right, not a finesse pitcher. And let's be real, that's what Jonathan Papelbon is now.
Yeah, that's really well said. All right, final place we got to go. Besides the, I'm so scared, what is your favorite of all time Saved by the Bell episode?
Oh man, I was hoping this question would come. I think my favorite was when the ROTC came and they did an obstacle course the hallways.
That was a very underrated episode.
I think so.
Lieutenant Lips. Oh yep. Yeah.
Oh yes.
Very nice.
I also liked one I know that has been mentioned before on the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I think it was the Hoedown episode.
That was really bad.
Brian Tarkanian? Was it Tarkanian?
Tarnikoff.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That one.
The Johnny Dakota episode with the No Hope with Dope.
That's
the greatest.
Such a good after school special.
And then he was like, oh, sell my jacket so you can raise money. And Zach's like, no, I'm keeping this jacket. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. No, favorite show of all time growing up.
Unbelievable.
No question.
I mean, that's at least I run through those episodes. Like, I have the DVDs, and I got to go through them a couple times a year. I mean,
well, my problem is I haven't, because I know they were on Netflix for a little while, but I hold them in such esteem in my head. Like, it was such a just part of my childhood that watching them now, I know I'm going to be like, dude, really?
I got to tell you, they hold up better than you'd think.
Do they?
Okay. They do.
That's good to hear.
And it's really clutch because now you watch them on the DVD and you cut through all the commercials so you can blow through them in like 18 minutes. So God, even if you get that, what am I watching? You're like, well, I'm almost done anyways, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah, it's a lock that Kelly Kapowski was my first crush, if you will.
Yeah, yes, when she worked at the Malibu Sands, that was a great summer for me, too.
That was a really nice one. I really liked that one. I liked when they went to Vegas. I liked – oh, you know what one I liked very much? The hop, the one with the hop.
Oh, yes.
Where Lisa
the sock hop.
Foot. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. When she did the sprain.
The sprain.
When Casey Kasem brought the Dance Party USA to the school.
To the Max.
It was
at the Max.
Oh, gosh. And it was the powerhouse preppies were Jesse and Zach. Oh. Yes. And the spandex twins, Slater and Kelly. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yep.
So bad that I remember this and I can't remember my anniversary. Yeah, that's how things are going.
You know what? That's fine. You remember the important things in life. And that's all that matters.
Good thing for Google Calendar. Yeah, exactly.
No, I love it. I love Saved by the Bell. It cracks me up, and that's my favorite part of that show every single episode that comes out, because there's going to be a random Mr. Belding reference or something like that, which, by the way, when's he going to be on the show?
We are desperate. I'm desperately trying to make that happen. Good. Legitimately, good. That is – somebody asked me once. They were like, who are your top targets if you could have anybody on the show? And I was like, Mr. Belding might be number one.
Fair.
I mean, legitimately, he would be – easily a top five for me. Of course, it would just be me nerding out and be like, okay, so what happened in this episode? But
yeah. Also like the one where they threw a party in Belding's office.
Oh, yes.
They had all the party favors on the reverse of the picture frames.
Because they forgot Screech's birthday? Oh,
yep,
yeah.
And it was basically Benny Hill music for 20 minutes.
And Kevin the robot all of a sudden was his deputy as the
of
hall
course.
Monitor. I liked when he taught Kelly science. That was a great episode, too.
Nice. Oh, man. Nothing but good times. Did you watch when they did that? What was it? The E-Entertainment? ETV?
Yes.
That was hilarious.
And they were all like, yeah, you know, Screech, I don't really know what happened to him, man. They were like, yeah, we're not touching that one.
Yep. You don't leave that one alone.
As will the show, please. So... All right, Craig, on that note, what else do we need to talk about before we get out of here?
Which prospect are you most excited to see?
In the majors or just in general?
Just in general.
I am desperate to go see Victor Robles again.
And when will that be?
I'm hoping for Friday if Hagerstown is in town. That's the next time I can get to scout. So hopefully that'll be – and I think Hagerstown's in town. But I think Giolito is probably the easy answer, but Robles is one of the most – the tools are just unbelievable, and I've just – you don't see it at that age. I mean, it's kind of the same thing we said about Harper a couple years ago. It's just – he's a different player, but he looks to me like what B.J. Upton should have become. I mean, he just looks like a stud, and he's so athletic. I mean, you just sit there and you're like, what can't he do on the field? And then all of a sudden he uncorks this huge throw from the outfield to third base, and you're like – oh, so he can throw, too. Oh, he can go run. Oh, he can hit for power. oh, he can put the bat on the ball. You're like, it's raw, but he's amazing. I mean, it's really legit.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my eyes on him for sure. But I hate to correct you on your own show. You mean Melvin Upton.
That's true.
You mean Melvin.
But I was going with, I will say, in my defense, I was going with what BJ was supposed to become, not what Melvin has become.
There
so
you
maybe
go.
We can split the difference on that one.
So, Giolito, when do we see him in DC? Because it's going to be this year, right?
Oh, it'll be this year. He has been struggling a little bit, although his start this week was much better. I think he went six innings and gave up four hits and you know, no runs or one run. But I know he's tinkering with his motion a little bit and some things.
Do you think one of these situations where he's bored? Like the smart kid in school is cutting up in class because he's just smarter than everyone else?
I think there's a little of that. And I think we've seen it sometimes. We saw it with Lindor a little bit last year with Cleveland, and we've seen it with some other prospects who we saw it with Rendon a couple years ago when he was sitting in the minors as well. All of a sudden he exploded when he got to the majors. I think there's some of that. I do think he's making some tweaks, and you know, the jump from high A to double A is big, and he only had a few starts last season. I mean, I think he got 30 innings at double A last year. So give him time. You know, one or two starts is tough. He's a California kid, and it's been freezing cold and raining here in the D.C. area, and he's up in Harrisburg. So, you know, I'm not – I would guess, assuming that we don't have any catastrophic injury between now and the trade deadline, you know, somewhere around then.
Yeah. I have always said it's going to be the first starting injury after June 1.
Yeah, that's
what I'm sticking with.
Although Austin Voth has been pitching great. If they wanted to just have somebody come in for a start or two, that might be the guy. But I'm with you. If it's really somebody that's going to be injured for a while, you know, if all of a sudden somebody was hurt for a while, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Trey Turner is going to be, I mean, goodness, he should be up in a couple of weeks at this point.
Yeah, that was the next question. That's the question on everyone's mind right now. Trey Turner, when is he going to be freed?
Either the official date, I think, is the 31st he can be freed, and or if the Nationals really go in the tank in the next 2 weeks, or if Espinoza really goes in the tank. But I think at this point now, you've waited enough that now you need to wait the next 2.5 weeks or whatever the kind of the time frame is at this point. I mean, you've already bit the bullet. You might as well. I mean, you know what I mean? You've already had the bad, you know, you've already taken the consequences of your decision. You might as well ride it out at this point.
Yeah, and I think right now we're waiting for the point for him to be not just, I think, what, a Super 2, technically?
Correct.
I don't think that term's really used anymore.
But I also, I also think, and FP's mentioned it a couple times, but we are seeing Espinoza taking a lot better at bats the last couple weeks, or at least in the last 3 or 4 games, he's been a lot better, and he had a home run tonight, and his defense has been better the last 10 days too. So
yes, his defense was really strangely rocky to start
the
season.
At least mediocre.
But I mean, he's got that range, and nothing has made me appreciate Danny Espinoza more than seeing Stephen Drew play shortstop. I mean, not that Stephen Drew is a bad shortstop at all, but when it comes to the throw,
yeah,
wow.
I think we get an appreciation for how good Desmond was as well when you see Drew, who's pretty much considered an average shortstop, and you realized, wow, you know, for all his faults, you know, Desmond was a pretty good shortstop over there.
Yeah, left fielder Ian Desmond.
Yeah, who's been killing it since, what, you know, 2 weeks into the season. He's one of the best players in baseball.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
So, Craig, I'm going to cut it here. I could talk to you all night about the Nats, but I'm going to try to stop it here just for both of our sanities. Give you a spot here to plug everything, your Twitter, where they can find Nats Talk on the Go, and everything in between.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. I am at Craig Mack, M-A-C, on Twitter. You can also find me on the Nats Talk on the Go podcast on Twitter, Nats at Nats Talk on the Go, iTunes, same thing. I write probably once every other week on the natsblog.com. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I just did a thing about the Strasburg piece, and you can find that. I think it's on Facebook. We're having some website issues right now, but that's okay. Yeah, I do some writing here and there, but basically it's going to – if you follow me on Twitter at Craig Mack, you're going to get a lot of random soccer tweets and beer tweets, so be ready for that and enjoy those.
Absolutely. You got those hot takes coming from you as well as some Nats talk as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Craig, thanks so much for joining me. I'm glad to finally get you on the show, and hopefully I'll have you on later this summer.
Yeah, it sounds great to me. We'll get you on Nets Talk on the go, too.
Yeah, that's the next question. When am I making a return appearance?
That's right. I would guess draft time.
Yeah, that would be my guess. I'm waiting for all those
calls.
That's
your wheelhouse, man.
I love it. I can't wait. We're only about 3.5 weeks away now.
Oh, my God. It's so close.
I can't wait. So, all right, Craig, thank you so much. And that was episode 67 of the Nats GM show with the Nats blog's Craig McHenry. I want to thank him for joining me and giving me so much time. Just thankful to the Nationals for giving us so much fodder to talk about this episode. So thank you, guys. And thank you to Craig for joining me. It was a lot of fun. So hopefully we'll have him on later this summer. Episode 67 is a wrap. With that, bye for now.